What did Apple say that to me?
Just pick that up. Just waiting for the guy in the helmet.
Are you wearing it? Yeah, are you okay switching from one presentation to the next?
Yeah, I know how. I think. Yeah.
You're about the only one who does.
If he gets it wrong, you will stop me.
I'll do yours, you do mine.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good evening. Oh, good afternoon. I'll try that again. Sorry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
That's just woken everybody up. As usual, very little from me. That's because I've taken 10 minutes out of this already by allowing you to drink and eat. Courtesy of UBS, our very kind sponsors, who are looking after us all the evening this evening at the bar. They said it's an open bar all night. Was that right?
Did we say that?
You're not going to finish at 11, do we?
The bar is open. That's. I knew you'd said something along those lines. Just misunderstood.
You sort of take it a bit further, don't you?
Always trying and pushing my luck. This evening, two presentations. We have running second David Scarlett, the business coach. Those that came last year will have, well, probably know of David as, you know, an author. He goes around on the circuit talking and helping IFAs become better at their business. And also, he all reminds people to turn their phones off before he talks. Sorry, I'm going to take that lesson later. So David's going to be talking second, and if he stops talking halfway through, it's because his back's broken and his voice is gone and all of those things, and then we'll step in and wind him up again because he's kind of been under the weather for the last week. But first we're going to have Nicola Down of Trentham Invest. Now, I've not met Nicola before today, but I have spoken on the phone and I've looked at her website and I've been sort of very impressed with what I've seen. But just a small firm that seems to be doing all the right things, which I believe is a result of working with David. So what I wanted to do, rather than just bring a business coach in to talk to us about what they think we should be doing, I kind of wanted to hear it from the horse's mouth and saying, this is what I've gained, and this is how it's been useful to me by working with a third party, and here's what I expect to gain. So I wanted to get two sides of the story, the good and the, maybe the not so good, the things that you would have hoped would work better than they did, perhaps. So hopefully that's going to be very useful. Now, I'm going to be filming this at the back, hopefully, if I get the buttons right, and we'll condense that down into the best 6 or 7 minutes and hopefully try and put it on a website somewhere so we can sort of capture that. So if you won't see me, I'll be hiding at the back whirring and fiddling about with things. Feedback forms are on your seats, so I have that, please. And then, as usual, there's an attendance sheet. I'm going to pass this around, put your names and details, and then you get your CPD certificates, and then you'll hear from me a little later on. Thank you very much, everybody. Oh, sorry.
All right, good afternoon, evening. It's dark in here, don't know what time of day it is. Ladies and gentlemen, you've worked out by now that I'm Nicola Downs, Managing Director of Trentham Invest. And given the fact that I absolutely hate speaking in front of audiences like this, believe me, there are very few people alive I would do this for. However, I've been asked to make a presentation on how Trentham Invest has achieved the level of success to date and what this has got to do with working with a coach, and in my case, it's David Scarlett. The time of year couldn't be more apt, just having watched the top tennis players on this planet play Wimbledon over the last 2 weeks. Firstly, it would be easy for me to summarise my experience with David and the Advisor Gym programme by pointing out a single metric, such as 453% increase in revenue from funds under management. But no way does that tell the real story of the relationship and the working relations that we have. Today, with a skilled support team, an environment which speaks of substance, quality and order. I regard myself as far more than a financial planner. I'm developing as a business leader and of a successful business. The presentation I'm going to take you through starts with 2003 to 2007, where I was before I met David. And then I'm going to take you through 2007-2010 of working with David. When I first took on my thoughts about what I was going to do, it was April 2002. I resigned from London and it was August 2001. Went on a 4.5 month trip around the world. Had a big break because I knew I was going to be facing a very big challenge, probably one of the biggest challenges of my life when I came back. There was one thing that really stuck with me was I made a booking in Australia, which was 2.5 months ahead of when I was going to arrive there. And when I arrived 2.5 months later, somebody greeted me at the airport and said, "You must be Downs and Rao. This is a coach." I thought, blimey, how can I get that so wrong? And it's the little things like that that really matter to me. So I wanted to build a business with things that meant something to me, things that I believed in. But there were so many things, brand, image. I wanted the business to be remembered for simple solutions to complex problems, traditional values, 21st century ideas. The location was simple. It was Dorking, it's where I live. The offices I wanted to be in the heart of the community. We all know we need resources, equipment, marketing, and so on. But what about that logo? What on earth would symbolise Dorking and the Mole Valley? And then marketing and professional connections really came as the first thing that I started to develop. And by June 2002, the artwork was completed one afternoon whilst watching tennis and Wimbledon, but not by me. I went out marketing and networking in 2004. I said there'd been some personal transformation, and this is one of them. I look quite different. I met David at a PFS meeting in East Grinstead, and I heard this man speak and talk. And when he began to talk, I listened more and I listened more, because the things he was saying just made so much sense to me. And I thought, this is a man that speaks my language. And it just felt really good to me. So I felt that somehow I was on the right path. And having been on my own for a couple of years, networking, developing connections, the feeling was really most welcome to have somebody on the outside somewhere just to say, you know, I was doing the right thing. But the stark reality was, whilst I had started my journey, whilst we had an office, we had an image, we had repeatable income, which was just enough to cover the office rent. It was not even as much as annual state pension in retirement, really. We had a RAP platform. We had almost 1 million with Scandia, brochure, business cards, website, database. And staff. Remember how important they are. This was my first effort. And then fairly soon after that, the phone rang. And it was David. And he said, "Hello," he said, "would you like to have a one-to-one meeting with me?" And he asked me what I was doing, and I asked him what he was doing. I said, "Okay then, we'll meet." This was a man who was talking my language. let's just take this a bit further. He asked questions like, "What's your plan? Where are you going? So things like 50 million by the time of 50. Yeah, so that's interesting. This is where you now. So one. This is when do you think you'll get to 10? I said July 2007. I said, do that. I'll take you for lunch. So 2 years later, it was December 2006, and I thought it was time that I picked up the phone, not having spoken to David at all. And he answered, "This is David Scarlett." And I said, "Ah, just the man. I'm not sure if you remember me, it's Nicola Downs of Trentham Invest." He said, "Yes, yes, I remember you." I said, "Well, the reason I'm calling, David, is because I'm feeling very hungry and I'm feeling very thirsty. And so I picked the most expensive restaurant that I could find in Dorking, with crisp, clean tablecloths. I've not been to a place like this for years. I've worked my socks off for the last 3 years, and I just needed some serious spoiling, some listening to, and some careful treatment, and some careful handling." We went out, we cried laughing. All the people in the restaurant wondered what we were on. We shared some very inner thoughts. We seemed to share some very similar values, but not at a superficial level. This was not superficial at all. This was very, very deep. So I wondered, well, what's going on? What's going on with Trentham Invest and this David Scarlett that seems to be entering my life? So I went to one of his workshops, and that 50 million was just nowhere near where I needed to be. That was one of my first realizations. And what I was doing was convincing myself that actually I needed someone to talk to, somebody I could trust, someone who was professional on the same wavelength, who shared my values, who understood me and my little idiosyncrasies. And I have plenty. And apparently I can be a real pain. I also needed someone other than my 74-year-old aunt, who I shared a lot with, but she hadn't got a scrap of business experience. And now I was finding someone who I could talk to, and a group of people that I could also relate to. And so from my lonely, solitary days of single-handedly building this monster, I was starting to find other people of like minds, as well as David, coupled with the fact that starting the business was easy for me. I left London with me and one other person at 250,000 and three AFP exam passes in a year. I could rebuild this, but I wanted more, much more. And for me, the real challenges lay ahead and just round the corner. I now want to share with you the sort of problems I was starting to face. And my clients were starting to face. But no space. The clients had grown enormously. The volume of clients, they had no air conditioning. You can see there's a fan in there. I had a problem with that. I used to blow the papers all over the place. So if I turned it on, it was cooler, but the papers were everywhere. If I turned it off, it was warmer. There was higgledy-piggledy papers started to appear all over the walls. Another dog out of control. Goodness, what's happening to this business, this professional, controlled business that I was building? And that really was when I started to engage services and working with David. And now I'd just like to share with you some of the examples of the work that we've completed together over the last 3 years. These have taken time to implement, I might add, and because of this myelination process that David will no doubt talk to you about, and that I've experienced during some of these steps. And for me, it's like rewiring your home. You've got to pull all the wires out and then put them all back in, but in a completely different way. And that's just hard work. Seriously, hard work. For me, it is. One of the first things that we did was a customer service questionnaire. This was done in 2007. The RDR and all this financial services thing was not the catalyst for this. What I wanted to know, after 4 years of starting from scratch, was three things. Why did clients come to us in the first place? What were the main reasons for still being here? And what do they value about this relationship that they have with Trentham Invest? So, and David acted as a sounding board and helped design the questionnaire. So I put something together and he had quite a lot of input in the wording. And really the whole purpose of this was to get as many people as we could respond to this, because the more information we had, the better the quality of the, not the quality of the answers, but the sample of the data, and then we can use those to build the business a bit further. Really valuable and really significant for helping me make decisions in the business. Why come to us? First three things, they were recommended by a friend or a colleague or professional connection. So that told me all the networking, all the professional connection development that I've done, and all the hard work was paying off and paying dividends. My product knowledge and experience was next, and personal service was the third. So that was really quite pleasing, that we were doing things right. But the real gems came out of the next two. The main reasons for staying there were my knowledge in pensions and investments. They were treated as an individual, the quality of service, and a friendly staff. And it's the service that really started to come out of the feedback. And what they value is that is the thoroughness of what we do, professionalism, and keeping promises. So I then started to come away from the reasons they came to the business. And so what we've done is work with that information, shared it with the team, so that everybody understands why clients are here, so that they can behave in the ways that will keep the clients coming back. I'd like to take you on some communication issues that we had next, and how we communicate sort of case studies and things to the outside world and to the real world. And this was particularly hard for me. I'm quite a technical person by nature and quite analytical. Communication doesn't come naturally, hence talking to you people doesn't come to my list. It's so easy to get lost in the details of what we do, and especially the hours that we spend looking at the data, facts, and more data. But things that came out for me was just we've got to ditch all this popple. And so the end of all this hard labour, hours and hours, you know, no more than 4 bullet points. And David has helped and taught me to speak outcomes. Outcomes such as increasing somebody's pension in retirement by 55%, extra cash to pay off the mortgage and buy a horse. If somebody dies, get 65 years of income on day one, and capital is preserved still after 18 months. And just relate these back to the client's situations, and that's been quite a challenging thing for me. And that takes me probably just as long as it does to do all the analysis and the work. So we now put some case studies on the website, and so we communicate and we speak in terms of outcomes for clients and what the work that we do means for them. And when David kind of makes me spend even more hours communicating in this way, then he becomes the real pain. So then we started talking about the client journey and this thing here. And the thing that we spoke about was what happens next to the client, so they don't feel completely in the dark with what's going to happen next after a meeting. And what we did was we started with the internal process within the business. There was about 85 lines of a spreadsheet, and boy was that dull. And there was no way I could give that to clients. And so I brought the team in, and we started to tape some pieces of paper together, no bigger than this, because we didn't have a flip chart. And we stuck them on the wall, and we started to clump the small steps into bigger steps. And I got the team to name the steps, or help me name the steps. What does it mean? They felt part of the process, and it then became something that was meaningful for the clients. And then we had an issue with the list of these things. Well, how on earth are we going to get these on one sheet of paper? And I had a lady in the office, she says, well, we make one of these. And so thanks to her, we have it in this concertina fashion. And then we had a blank reverse, and all the back of this was blank. And I don't like wasting space, and I wanted to put something on the back. So then we thought, well, we'll come up with some values that the business stands for, and we'll put those on. And we came up with meaningful, overarching, lifelong, and exploitation. Sorry, I meant exploration. And that's kind of where we got to by 2008, 2009. And at this point, the inside of the business just needed some serious attention with some order, reordering, restructuring. And so we were introduced and brought in Michelle Hoskin, who is with us in the audience. She's the pregnant lady. I really want to say that. And what Michelle has done is helped us. She's worked with me, and she helped, and she kind of speaks a language that when a business needs order and structure to manage volume, that this lady understands the language. It's foreign to me, but it also makes sense to a business manager. So Michelle has sown seeds and just been excellent at making that transference of her knowledge through me across the business manager. And 12 months on, the business is in a much stronger and better shape. So thanks to Michelle. She's like a guiding pair of hands within the business, and she just really listens to what you want and how your business works, and then gives you examples of tools that she has that might help you in your business. So it's far more defined, far more structured, far more ordered, and far less out of control. We also do dog training on a Wednesday evening, which helps. It was then time to really invest in the business, in its presence, and part of that was the team too. So Michelle again was acting as a sounding board as well as David. In terms of the team, what's it look like? What sort of people do we need? What sort of qualities do they have to make this monster work? And Karen was brought in as business manager. Her background is not financial services. She hadn't got a clue about what we did. She didn't know what I was babbling on about. But she has got fantastic skills in business management, team management, and workflow. She's just proven to be an excellent addition to the team. Also, if she doesn't understand what we're communicating to clients, she will not let that information go out of the office. She will not let it go. And we have to turn it into language that people understand. We've also got Sheila. This is Karen's wingman, she calls her. And she's a business administrator, and she helps with all of the business issues and business matter. Again, her background is not financial services. She doesn't particularly want to understand financial services, neither of them do. And between them, they just make sure the office works, the workflow goes round, and there are plenty of reserves. You know how irritating it is when you go and get a pen to go and write on a flip chart or something and it doesn't work, and you just want to throttle the person who's responsible for pens? That's what they do. Then we've added Deborah. She's a technical administrator, so she's coming inside the business in terms of the technical nature and the financial services lingo language that we speak. Flood her with numbers and data, she just loves it. We also outsource services as well, and it's just an example of Karen and Vicky from our compliance outsource services. She comes in, she works closely with Karen, and you know, I'm pleased to say we had a really good report back from the compliance visit that we had most recently. We also outsource other services such as IT, legals, accounting, and in short, I try and stick to my knitting. So now I'd like to show you some of my knitting. This project started with David asking, Nicola, can you list out all the things that you've knitted for clients? So okay then. So 3 pages later, he said we'll talk about that at the next one-to-one, thanks. I just had a feeling he didn't either really get my knitting, or he just didn't like it, or wasn't really sure. So we carefully talked, and David's just channeled my skills and wisdom into the forefront of my mind. We spent the whole day writing 6 bullet points and reduced the 3 pages of loads of stuff into something really clear, really focused. And I just thought, blimey, is that all I can do now? You know, thought he's taking things away from me, not allowing me to be this wonderful financial planner and all these things I can do. But to be frank and to be truthful, it's been simplifying, it's been liberating, and I'm entirely grateful for this process. What we're now doing is aligning the business to my genius, bringing more focus to every part of what the business does and what we do. And it's taken me a long time to kind of get this business program and the things that David talks about. So either I'm slow or this rewiring exercise just takes that long. And to magnify the business to the next level and to where I want it to go, these things have to happen, otherwise we will never get there in a million years. It's hard working sometimes with people who tell you you're wrong. you know, and they want you to see it from another point of view. That's hard for you to absorb. It's hard for that person to deliver. And believe me, I'm not an easy person to work with. But this man pulls it out of me like string. He just has that talent. So do you remember I talked earlier about space problems? And I talked to you about what we've done with the space. Luckily, we were able to cuckoo the landlord out of the upstairs level, upstairs offices. We were on the ground floor and we desperately, desperately needed space. We have boxes, cabinets and things all over the place. I'm just very fortunate. After 6 hard years, it gave me the opportunity to refit the office and bring my vision to some kind of sense of reality. When the clients come into the office, I want them to wear Trentham Invest. I want them to smell it, breathe it, feel it, see it, and be it. We have the certificates, the professionalism, I guess, in the hall as soon as they walk in. And if they dare venture upstairs to the toilet, they get faced with a female or a mole. That came out of a workshop, by the way. And a lot of these ideas aren't just mine. They come from all over the place. Just inside the door, it gave us an opportunity. There was a blank wall that I could display the press articles that we've been involved with. And even the name Trentham Invest is lasered in the carpet in the client suite area. There's absolutely no room for doubt as to where you are. I hope not anyway. When you walk in, there's then a reception area. And when we were having the refurbishment done, I asked, there's going to be a partition along here, so how many panels are you going to use? They said 4. I went, 4? They'd never heard somebody so excited about 4. I knew exactly what was going on those panels. Because of the work that I'd done before. Meaningful, overarching, lifelong exploration. Just get that right. It also gave us an opportunity to have the stepping stones. We had it printed on digital wallpaper. And it's a picture that resembles the relationship. David and I sat one day, so why do you have this picture? Why do you have it so large in there? We sat and talked. Things such as, it's a symbol of our relationship. We wanted to remind people of the area of natural beauty. The river has qualities of reflection. To look at yourself in a way that you've seldom done before, to see your most important values expressed, and to realise, because of the questions we ask, why you live the way you do, here in the Mill Valley and its environs. And it goes on from there. And we describe the water, and we describe the stepping stones, and they're a symbol of the path that we provide and we show people how to get to realise their life dreams that are most important to them. This is the client boardroom. And a lot of people say, gosh, you've invested so much in this area, why do you do this? Well, the fact is, I really leave Dorking. I came to the building here, I've never seen so many brown doors. Okay? And I got so lost. And I asked for the toilets, and they said it was over there. I said, any particular brown door to go through? And no, there's just so many. I barely go out, not very good. The carpet has got the Trentham Invest And here we've got the original artwork, framed on the wall. Another picture of a local scene. Somebody found you can get wine with Trentham on it. I thought, yeah, it's a good one, that. And the DVD, Gosford Park. And it was earlier in one of my slides that I failed to mention where the name came from, but I sat thinking of the name. I didn't want my name on the business. And I was in the Metro Centre in Gateshead watching a film, watching Gosford Park with my family, and there it was, Lady Trentham. It was an old-fashioned film. I thought, yeah, this is the kind of business I'm trying to build, trying to create, and Lady Trentham comes in. I thought, that's her, Trentham, and there it was. Everything we do really is to improve the client experience, so they're not mauled. They've got some pleasant air conditioning, they've got room to sit, room to relax, and we've got the whole of the downstairs and all the client services is upstairs, which is separated from the clients. Now, we're no means done, we're not finished. Believe it or not, we still have people who don't want to engage in our services. I know that's really hard to believe after what you've seen. But that's what we're working on next. We also need to work on our ongoing servicing fee structure. We are very heavily linked to assets under management, and that just kind of, it's okay, but it doesn't sit totally well. And our marketing strategy needs to be tightened up so that instead of doing lots of knitting, we will just be attractive to people who want specific types of knitting. I'm looking forward to it, but it's also frightening. So where are we? After much help from David and Michelle. The office, well, we're fully refurbished and we've doubled the space. We've made an investment in the office and I see us there for 5 years. The image that we had, or what we had, has become a culture and an ethos within the firm. We have 17 clients, they've grown to 116, but they're valued relationships. I do get rid of people, and I look at any opportunity to get rid of them, because we do have some higher value clients coming in. Snoring.
It's an epic bit, doesn't
it?
Snoring
in my presentation.
Chuck some of that
rubber on. It's so
mold.
Interested in knitting.
We got our repeatable income has grown from 17% to 70%. Stable team of 4, which is soon to be 5. And we have 22 client testimonials and 55 press articles on the website. And so I'd just like to now start to close before introducing David, and just to summarise why I work with David, the business coach. I had the raw energy, the potential, the drive, the enthusiasm and the vision, and I knew where I wanted to be, deep in my heart, my soul and my mind. But I didn't know how to couple my vision with the prime skills of a technician. And what David has done is allow me to channel my skills and vision into a successful business for the future. My vision's not realised yet for the future. My journey will probably never end. My vision evolves as the business evolves, and David allows me to evolve. He'll always remain on my horizon. And one thing does remain, whatever the vision is that David's helping me to build a business, ensuring the client service experience continues with the same exceptional service and high standards they've come to expect. So that the whole business sounds, thinks, has a culture so clear that anyone can fit in the roles and perform the tasks. That the business oozes my heart, my soul, and my mind. Thank you for listening.
You've got to switch your microphone around. I didn't realise it was going to be such a personal journey. Thank you for sharing that. That's very good. Lots of questions. I won't ask them now. We'll ask them later. But I just did want to make sure that the fifth member of staff wasn't as a result of Michelle being pregnant. And any moment now. That's just the way my mind works. Warped. It's warped, I know.
Thanks.
So we're just swapping over. So do you want to sit down there and then we'll over that later.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool. Mics. He's wearing three mics.
Right, it's fun.
He's only got one now.
It's okay.
David Scarlett, thank you.
Thanks. This is fun. Good. Thanks. Dennis, do we know how to get to my thingy from here?
Sort of, yes.
All right.
Whilst
Dennis is doing that, thanks, Nicola. Nicola hates doing this. She's just, why would I put her through that? Well, I could have called Steve down from Newcastle, or Simon up from Cornwall, or a whole range of clients I could have called, but I just felt Nicola had a story to tell that was very intimate, very personal. And when I walk into Nicola's office, forget about what I've done, I'm just really impressed. I walk into this thing, this culture, and it just oozes class. And I just needed you to see that. Really, as you walk in and look at the carpet, Trentham Invest is woven into the carpet. I've never seen that done anywhere else apart from a business like this. So I just chose Nicola because I felt this is a classy story from a classy lady. This time last week I was in hospital. Didn't want to tell Dennis, so I didn't want to worry him. But I had two of these things here. Well, these were inside me, tubes and wires and monitors and injections just about everywhere you can think of on your body. And it was not fun. The day before, Monday, I just popped in for a quick checkup to the doctor. And next minute, I was in an ambulance with a wee wah going and the blue light and the traffic all stopping. Oh, what the heck's going on here? And clearly they were worried about my heart. Something was not going right with my heart and they didn't like it. So I was screaming into an ambulance to the nearest hospital. And I have to tell you, when you go through an experience like that, it does cause you to think a little and to review your life and your business. So I changed my presentation based on what I was thinking about this time last week, exactly this time last week, in a hospital bed, and then just reviewed it and sent it off to Dennis. What did I think whilst I was lying in my bed that has anything to do with what might help you in your business and what might help and Nicola Downs? Well, firstly, it was a real wake-up call. Secondly, I realised I'd had the most amazing life to date. And I was really, really happy with where I got to in my life. The most astonishing life. I have 5 children. I have friends across the globe. I've had experiences you would not believe. And because I've interviewed over 5,000 people now over the last 30 years, at some depth, do a lot of counselling and ministry outside of work, and started life planning back in 1989, because of my counselling background, I get to interview a lot of people in depth, and I'm talking about deep counselling and deep ministry and deep questioning, right underneath the layers of skin and getting right down into the soul and core of a person. And I've learnt to do that very fast because that's my training. And I realise after 5,000 interviews over 30 years, I have lived a life most of you will never live. I've lived experiences that most human beings, most men on this planet, will never see for the whole of their lives. I'm really grateful for it. Not because I'm intelligent, I'm not that bright, as you well know, some of you that know me. I've just had great experiences. So that wake-up call was quite interesting for me. Had I died, I wouldn't have been that unhappy. I would have had a great life. I would have missed quite a few things. Did I have any regrets? Yes, some. Had I things that I needed to put right? No, I've done that over the last 5 years. I've taken a lot of time out to put things right in my life that needed putting right. But it made me think, you know what? The business that I run cannot continue in the way it's running. Why? Because it's not really a business. And that's really the theme of my comments in the next 20 minutes tonight. What I'm running is not yet a business. It is still a practice. And most of the advisors I meet, and I'm talking about CFPs, double CFPs, really well-known financial planners, do not run a business either. They do run a practice. And most of what I'm doing with people like Nicola is to take really skilled financial advisors and planners and help them to realize this will not work in the future. You will be overtaken. RDR is not the problem here. In fact, RDR is just a sideshow. Those businesses that lead in the future and will marginalize all other businesses are those that realize that practice is not business. That running a practice is not the same as creating a meaningful business. What do I mean by that? If something had happened to me last Tuesday, my business would not have continued without me. Ipso facto, by definition, it is not a business. If you cannot walk out of your business for 6 months and it continues sweetly and smoothly without you, you do not run a business by default. By definition, it is not a business. It is a professional technical practice. Brilliant as it may be, I don't care if you're earning £1 million a year, it's irrelevant. By definition, a business is a system or a vehicle that can operate without the founder or the main professional within it. Until it can do that, it is not a business. And I realised that my business was not yet in a shape where it could run without me. So in the 2 days that I've been out of bed, which was yesterday and today, okay, this is my first trip out of home. I'm quite excited about today. You know, many speakers say, I'm really awfully glad to be here. I have to tell you, I'm really awfully glad to be here. Okay? Because last Tuesday, I wasn't so sure. I wasn't so sure about anything last Tuesday. I'm really glad to be here. But it made me realise that in the 2 days that I've been out of bed, I need to make some serious decisions about my future and the role model that I was setting for the Nicholas, the clients of mine that look up to me to show them the way. And so I made some fairly fundamental decisions in 48 hours. I've just recruited a young man, 35 CVs sitting on my desk when I got back to the office, all graduates, and I recruited one of them, made an offer yesterday afternoon on the phone, which was accepted. Yesterday afternoon I also recruited something I've been pondering for weeks, a business manager, a cost of £35 an hour, to help run my business virtually, whether I was there or not, and to manage all the resources across the globe, and I do mean across the globe, India, Singapore, Philippines, who would provide all the technical services that I need to run the kind of business I want to run, eventually without me. So my plan that I've moved fast on within 48 hours, because I've got this big wake-up call, stop messing about and prevaricating, get on with my plan, will be in 3 years' time, the business won't need me to be there. And I will simply mastermind it. And then it will be a business. I just want to share some thoughts with you about business coaches. You may say, well, I really want to know about financial planners. Now, I want to show you what business coaches have as a problem in their life. I've realised in staring at business coaches and what they do, which includes me, they're awfully similar in their problems in their lives to financial advisors and financial planners. So similar, it's almost scary. Ants, very quickly, why ants? Well, I used to study ants when I was a kid. It was a bit sad. I used to love studying the society of ants. How does the society of ants work? And I realised that the problem that the way that ants work are similar to the way that financial planners work. In that they, if you've ever seen a train of ants going through wood, they're miraculous. They always keep on track. And they're really almost blind. And they always seem to follow a path, whether it's wonky or straight. All the ants follow the same path through the woods. And the obvious way they do that is they lay a chemical trail. And when I began to study how financial planners struggle with change, because you do, and I did as a financial planner for 20 years, I realised that the way we think is problematic. That is to say, the longer in the tooth you are as a financial planner, the bigger we have as a problem in helping you to change. Because when you work problems out as you grow up, particularly in business, the brain is very lazy. And what it does is it sees a problem and it tries to design a solution. Whether it works or not is irrelevant. It just tries to design a solution. And if a solution comes out of its looking at the problem, it says, right, got a solution, must remember that. Because I'm really lazy, I don't want to work this stuff out ever again. When it meets the same problem again, it follows the same solution path. And what happens in your brain is the neurons and all the synapses and all the pathways in your brain lay a chemical trail called myelin. And you become myelinated, so that every time you meet a problem that looks like the last problem, the brain says, to heck with working this out again, I'll follow the chemical trail of myelin and reach the same solution, because I'm really lazy. And the more that happens over the years, the more you become hardwired with the same solution. The fact that your solution may be one-fifth as good as the guy next door to you, who may be earning or creating five times the success rate, is irrelevant to your brain. It will just carry on delivering the same solution. And the longer you carry on with that behaviour, the more you become what we call in coaching myelinated. And when I meet you 20 years down the line, it's a hell of a job to get you to unmyelinate your brain to try a new solution. It's a real struggle. And every coach or mentor will find the same struggle with its client. Unmyelinating the way you think. And guess what happens? You fight to the death to defend what you think is the solution. Even if the solution I bring to you is 10 times as good, you still fight me. It happens all the time. So that's part of the problem. Now, coaches are a really strange bunch. These are business coaches. Why do 91% of business coaches earn less than $100,000 per annum? Because they're like you. They're fighting to defend what they think they know. Coaches work with intangibles. They're typically age 45 plus. That's interesting. They have masses of leadership and ownership experience, which is why they become business coaches. They're well-educated degree level. They have masses of life wisdom, exceptional problem solving, advanced communication ability, skilled at focusing on core issues, and the average coach in the States earns less than $20,000 a year. Why is that? Because they're so in love with coaching, they don't realise they're supposed to be running a business within which brilliant coaching is done. Why does the average financial planner with a CFP in the UK not earn more than £100,000 a year? Because they're so in love with financial planning that they forget they're supposed to be running a business within which brilliant financial planning is done. The communities are almost identical. And fighting a financial planner to get them to become a business person, not a financial planner, is hard work. But those that make it will be those that leave this industry. RDR is not the problem in the next 3 years, not five, three. RDR will not be your problem. Your competition will be those who become brilliant at running businesses within which brilliant financial planning is done. And if you don't understand what they're doing, they will marginalise you. and they will take this industry over. Whether they come from outside or inside is irrelevant. They will be leading this industry. Business people who then run brilliant financial planning services within the business. They're in love with their craft. Biggest challenge for most financial planners, you're in love with your own services and craft, and you think that's what causes a brilliant business to operate, and it isn't. Adding more CFPs will not turn you into a brilliant business person, nor will it create more success or effectiveness for you. The extra CFPs are a given anyway. You've got to have that stuff, otherwise other professionals will not regard you highly. I'm going to jump quite a few slides because our time is running out. Three myths that coaches buy into. Coaching is a profession. You can sell coaching. More coaching training equals more business success. They're all lies. Now swap coaching for financial planning. What heresy. I've been fighting like fury to make financial planning a profession for the last 5 or 6 years, and I'm coming along to tell you, actually, that's not what it's all about. No, financial planning is a business within which you better be running darn good financial planning services, otherwise your business will not succeed. But first, it's a business, and then it's a profession. And those that get that will always outperform and take the market share against those that don't. You can't sell financial planning. If you try to do it, somebody else will beat you to the quality clients. I'll tell you what you can sell. Oops, I'll just shut myself off. Okay, I won't go through eight. But I work with clients, I teach them how a business runs, not how a financial planning practice runs. Now, I'm happy to send that to you as a model by email. But I get my clients to understand this is how a business is structured. There are things that drive it. There are internal things that have to go on using people like Michelle. You have to learn how to acquire quality clients, that they must come to you and you not go to them. They must come to you and you not go to them. When a quality client comes to you, you're on the front foot. When you're going to them, you're on the back foot. When they come to you, you're in charge of the relationship. They come to you on your terms. When clients come to me, they come to me on my terms. When I was a financial planner and I eventually got client acquisition right, I was able to get 7 clients a week calling my business on our terms, on our fee terms, on our everything terms. We teach clients how to retain their clients. Who here has done a profitability analysis of every single one of their clients? When you come to sell your business, that's the first thing we'll be asked of you. Show me your profitability per client analysis. If you haven't got one, you're going to take the next few weeks and months doing one. Otherwise, the deal is off. You can't show an acquisitive company who wants to buy you that you've not done that. They're just not interested. How can you run a financial planning practice if you don't know that every client's profitable? Doesn't make sense. That means that somebody else is cross-subsidizing your relationships. Wouldn't mind telling that to my wealthiest clients. Did you realize you're cross-subsidizing that relationship over there? No, I didn't. If you told me, I would have walked out. So that's a kind of business model we use. Who here has selected one of those 7 business strategies for their business? You either select a business strategy or you're running what we call, in business terms, business by bumble. Business by bumble. There are actually 8 business strategies, I've just shown 7. You either choose one or you don't understand business. You may understand financial planning, but business is a mystery to you. Which of those business strategies do you think Nicola Downes initially has chosen?
Dominant local.
She wants to be the dominant local business in her geographical region. She wants everybody to know that she is Mole Valley. She is the epitome of the mole. That's why everything's moleized. She's chosen a business strategy. She may change it, but she has a business strategy and she organises everything around that. Unless you choose one of those, business is a mystery to you. My favourite one is niche marketing. I won't spend a lot of time on that today, got a few minutes left. But have a look at that and ask yourself the question, which one of those business strategies have we consciously chosen for our business? That's how a business person thinks, not a financial planner. Business. My favourite is niche marketing. To me, it's the fastest, most powerful way to attract quality clients who will pay your fees and work with you on your terms to your business. Niche marketing. It's a big subject, niche marketing, and we teach that to our clients. The other step in running a business is, why don't we deliver what they want? Have a look at that. You've seen things like this before. The last one I saw present this was 360. We spend a lot of time, it seems, delivering what they don't want. The orange stuff is what we tend to spend our time on. The green stuff is what they value most in the relationship. Think about what you spend your time on your business, and you'll find that the bell curve is just all in the wrong place. We spend a lot of our time working our butts off. I bet you work really hard. I bet you work 50 to 60 hours a week regularly. And I bet you a lot of the work you do is not what they actually value. We just get lost in what we think they need, and we spend a lot of time doing stuff they actually don't value at all. If only we could turn that time into things that they really valued, they would pay us more and value us more. They don't want this, you talking about you, and me talking about me. And when I go to websites, I know instantly whether you understand business or not, or marketing. If I see the website talking about you on the homepage, I know they haven't a clue. Do you honestly think, I want to hear about you, your team, your qualifications, your 25 years in business, granddaddy wore clogs and he was a financial planner as well, and all this stuff on your homepage? I couldn't give a monkey's as a potential client. That's this language, enough about me. I don't want to hear about you. I want to know if you understand me, potential client. They don't want many of that. It should be there somewhere, not on the home page. That tells me instantly this person doesn't understand business, certainly doesn't understand marketing. They're a brilliant financial planner, but not a brilliant business person. Nicola mentioned outcomes. When we teach our clients and when we talk to our clients, everything is about outcome. When you work with us, these will be the outcomes of work with us. Forget about how brilliant we are, it's irrelevant to you, but the outcomes in your life of working with us, and all financial advisors should learn this kind of language. The outcome of working with our business is this. There are intangible outcomes, the way you will feel, and there are tangible outcomes that you'll actually be able to see. And when I look at your brochures and your websites, I know instantly if you get that. And clients want to know, if I work with you, what will be the outcome? Not the process, the outcome. Outcomes, outcomes, outcomes. Always win. When I was trained as a coach 6 years ago, I was told to communicate this. When you work with me, you'll get all of this. I was so excited. 15 different things you'll get in working with me. After about 3 years, I realised what a load of hokum that was. All people want to know is, what will I get for me? reason is coaching, not coaching, taught me this. And he says, these are the outcomes in working with Dave Scarlett and the Advisor Gym. Business. Outcomes. Not financial planning, outcomes. Not how brilliant am I, how brilliant are they? What are the outcomes in their life? Simon would say this. Talking about that client analysis, if you've done a client analysis of your client base, this is what Simon got out of it. 15 months by doing a proper analysis of his client base, because I nagged him about it and made him do it, added 15.5 million of funds under management, simply because he was wasting time doing the wrong things with the wrong people. And in 15 months, an analysis showed him what to stop doing. He did the work, I didn't. I just said, I think you're wasting your time. He said he was travelling around five counties. I said, why are you travelling around five counties? Well, that's where my clients are. Did the analysis, they're not in five counties, they're only in one. 83% are in one county. Why would he want to travel to the other four counties? And in 15 months, he added 15.5 million assets just by careful analysis. So those are outcomes, and you need to think the same way too. If I'm going to work with you and you're my financial planner, what's the outcome of working with you that I can actually feel and touch and see? Not how brilliant a financial planner. I couldn't give a hoot about your CFPs. Not interested. I want to know what's the outcome in my life. Many of you will argue with me like crazy on this one. I don't charge by my presence or by my time. I charge by the value of the outcomes that my clients will gain by working with me. I can charge a hell of a lot more than you could by doing that. If you charge by time, your fees are capped. If you charge by your physical presence, well then your physical presence caps your fees. If you charge for meetings, I don't care about meetings, I love meeting you. What I care is what's the outcome in my life of working with you. That's how I charge. Really successful consultants, and you're a consultant, charge by outcomes. I work with a coach I've recently taken on. She works 4 days a week, 4 hours a day, from home, with no staff. If you want to work with her, it's $25,000 a year. Minimum. Speaking to her competitor, Alexandra Brown, if you want to work directly with Alexandra, she charges $100,000 a year per client to work with her. Outcomes is what she charges for, not time. And not her presence. You never get to see her. $100,000 a year. Outcomes. Okay, we've run out of time. I'm going to jump a little bit more. If you want to understand how to include marketing strategy within your financial planning business, grab this from our website. It's a 79-page marketing manual. Go to advisorgym.com. Pull it down. It's free. How to take your financial planning business and get clients coming to you paying the kind of fees for the outcomes that you want them to pay, the kind of clients that you really want. Have a look at that. What's really interesting to me is people struggle with this. You spent forever getting away from products and becoming a service organisation. That's what most of you have been doing in this business. And you recognise that the relationship is what they really love. But most people don't seem to understand that there's a relationship between this, this and this, and how much they'll pay. It's really obvious once you put it on the board. They'll pay more for the relationship than they will for your service. And they'll pay more for your service than they will for any products you're delivering to them. Now, that's really obvious now I've stated it. But think about this a little bit further. Have a look at this. I'm still getting people excited about... So just go back on that second. So where you had products, I'm now hearing advisors getting excited about the tools they're using, like cash flow forecasting software. It's just a tool. They get really excited about charging for that. People don't pay a lot for tools. They'll pay a hell of a lot more for your product. And your product, as Dennis will tell you, is taking a very complex service and packaging it in such a way and articulating it in such a way that people get it in seconds. I sat with one financial planner for 20 minutes, having asked him the question, tell me about your fee structure. After 20 minutes, and this was a very high profile financial planner in the UK, 20 minutes later, I still didn't know what on earth he was talking about. 20 minutes to explain a fee structure to another financial planner. If you can't explain your complex service in seconds or on one page, you haven't really thought it through. It should be so beautifully packaged, so crisply succinctly packaged and communicated that it looks as clear and crisp as if it was a shrink wrap product. Talk to Dennis about how he's productized his complex service. He's made it so crisp and clear, it's almost a product. And the relationship, people will pay you most, not for the relationship with you, because that causes a bottleneck in your business. You raise your fees and attract better quality clients when the relationship is with your business. And that every person in your business talks and sounds like you. And that the ethos and culture that's coming from you and your heart and your soul and your mind is driven all the way through your business. And people will pay the most for businesses like that. So, tools are just tools, whether software or not. Make sure your service is packaged like a product so I get it in seconds. And before I meet with you, I'm already convinced I'm going to work with you and we'll pay you what you want. And stop being the bottleneck to your business by being the only person with whom they have the relationship. Make the relationship with the business and let the business ooze everything that you are. And that's what Nicola's doing with hers. That makes sense? You follow that? And you will raise your fees phenomenally. And your product should include all of these things. It should be, there should be a clear business strategy. The client should know what it is. There should be an ethos and a culture that oozes through the whole business. If you don't have one, then you lower your ability to charge fees. It should include what you're really expert at and what you're not any good at that you want to outsource and delegate. You can't possibly be expert at everything, so stop trying. You should be able to define within that product the problems that you deal with and the outcomes that you deliver when you deal with them. That's your product. When you've got all those things in line, you've got a product. Until you do, you don't. I'm really confused why a lot of advisors can't seem to get collaboration and commitment from their clients early on. I hear things like free meetings. Free meetings? In the advice process. I don't give anything away for free when it's me that's involved. You can have all my intellectual property downloaded, a lot of it for free, but you're not getting me for free ever. I want to see commitment and collaboration at the very earliest part of our relationship. Total commitment to the meeting, total commitment to the relationship. And I want that to happen before I ever meet with you. So advisors meeting with me for the first time will have answered 25 questions in writing before they ever meet with me. If they don't answer that in writing and send back 25 answers, the meeting, as James knows, because he knows the process, is off. Until I see commitment and collaboration, I know that the people coming towards me don't value the relationship. And guess what happens when you get lots of commitment and collaboration? People will pay you lots more. When somebody's committed and collaborating in a relationship, they will pay for it because they value it higher. If you're not getting commitment and collaboration before the first meeting, your value has dropped through the floor as far as the client's concerned. And final point is release clients and activity. Get rid of people and things that don't belong in your business. Find a moral and ethical way to do it, but every year review your client base and release something like 10%. Just release it. Why? Because you should be growing. Your clients deserve you to keep on growing as a professional. You can't be growing if you're constantly dealing with minimal, simple problems and clients that actually don't deserve you. You should be constantly evolving as a professional and as a human being. Your clients deserve all of that from you. It's like saying, because Volvo have put in safety features into the car, well, we can't be bothered to follow that as a manufacturer. Well, no. If Volvo's doing it, then why aren't you doing it? We, the customer, deserve the very best from your product. Your clients deserve the very best from you. Lifelong learning is what they require from you. Growth, evolving. You can't keep doing that if you're being sucked dry by those that are at the bottom of your client base, don't actually deserve you, and are really not enjoying the relationship anyway, and you know they're not. So find ways of outsourcing, getting rid of, moving people on and activities on that really don't deserve your time, energy and money. Do those things and you'll have a better business. You'll set conditions whereby the outcomes are inevitable. And to me, the outcomes that matter most in my life, especially since my wake-up call, more free time. There are things that I've got to stop doing because they're just not worth my life for, and they're not worth yours either. More income and profits in spite of more free time. I want to enjoy my clients and my profession more than I do. And I want to spend time just working with my genius and outsource, as Dennis is doing, everything else that is not genius. Good enough in today's marketplace is not good enough. If you're working on things where you are good enough, you will be sidetracked by those that are genius. And if you're not genius at something, get it out of your business, because it's bottlenecking and squashing your business ability. Okay, I've been fairly blunt today, and I've rushed because time is short and football's on. But if you want to see the detailed notes of that which I've rushed over, let me know. For some reason, people want to hear the audio again. Why they'd want to do that beats me, but they do. If you want a free copy of the manifesto, the marketing manifesto, let me know. What I've been doing over the last 6 months that's really killed me, made me very tired, which is probably why I ended up in hospital, is dumping my IP, dumping workshop after workshop online into a complete 12-month modularized online video, audio, interview, workbook, PDF, download program. So all of this stuff will just be downloaded, be accessed online in a 12-month program. It's called the Advisor Blueprint. If you want to know what's going on there and have that available to look at, want to be in on the launch, have a look at it for yourself, free of charge for a while, let me know. And the way you can do it, or if you want to be on our weekly newsletter, by all means give me a card, but if it's not got an E on the front or the back, my staff will bin it. And that will allow you to have all of that stuff I've just promised free by email sent to you. Thank you so much for your time. It's football time. I guess you must go now. Thank you.
I don't need a microphone, but I'm going to use one. Thank you very much, David, and thank you very much, Nicola. We've probably got maybe 10 minutes to take questions if there are any. I've got the first question. Is modularisation a word? We'll talk about that later. I'm a coach junkie. I love working with people who can help me with my business, and I use lots of different ones. I'm using a coach right now to help me boost my fees up on the basis that I'm paying him £450 an hour and he doesn't do any financial planning, and I'm not charging £450 an hour for what I'm doing. So his sole job is to get me to charge £450 an hour. This needs to be working. We're getting there. And there's so much great stuff that we had out of David's and Sarah's Nicola's presentation today. And it only takes one thing sometimes to be good. And David spoke last year, and there's something I picked up from there. And he said, make yourself visible to those people you want to do business with in your marketing, and make yourself invisible to everybody else. And I'm halfway there. We are invisible to everybody. We're working on that. Now, are there any questions? We've got 10 minutes. There are. So if you pop up here and don't hide behind the flip chart, we'll take about 10 minutes of questions, and then we'll quick drink and bite, and then over to the bar. There was one at the back first, and then...
Okay. I just want to add something to Dennis's comment you might want to write down. The term I use is alienate your non-clients. Actually hack them off. When I first started presenting, we'll take this question a second, I met with a PR company called... I'll remember it in a second. The MD sat me down and said, you're a really nice person, I really like you. I said, oh, thanks very much, thank you. He said, but you're too nice. You're trying to please everybody in the audience, and it just won't work like that. So what are you asking me to do? He said, make a stand on that which you believe, be really firm about it, and alienate your non-clients. In other words, hack them off. And if half the audience wants to string you up at the end of the presentation, you've probably done it right.
Do.
That was really scary. Yes, that was really scary. Okay. So in your own marketing, decide who you want as clients and actually alienate everybody else by being very clear about who you want and who you don't want. Sorry, Michelle.
Just a question for Nicola. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed working with Nicola. She's quite a unique lady. And I think, you know, I saw Nicola develop over a certain period. And I'd just like you to share with the group, really, how important to you and your success having the right support team is, because I think a lot of advisors struggle with the right investment in them, the right training, finding the right person. So how important has that been to you in your success?
Huge, particularly at this point when the business was, you know, just a monster for me. But I just couldn't cope with it. I needed people, needed help, needed support. We've had staff in, staff out, issues on that, but to have the right people in the right place has been really, really important. It just releases the stress and the pressure. The business manager's taken all of that away in the main, but hasn't taken the control away from me. So she's upward facing as well as downward facing. And to get somebody who can do that is, you know, it's a real find. Very, very tough gig.
It's not a question. I just wanted to congratulate you on confronting your fears and conquering the public speaking. Yeah.
Just following on from what Michelle said, how many people have you actually got rid of?
Staff or clients?
Staff to begin with.
Staff. I'll be completely honest. I'm very good at sussing out if somebody's not particularly happy. Mm. And then if I go anywhere near them and ask, I just have to ask them one or two questions, and the notice is in on my desk upon them. It's hard. It's hard. I don't know. That's a real...
So the question was, how many have you got rid of?
Gosh.
Roughly.
About four.
In a period of 3-4 years?
Mm. Yeah, 5 years, 4 or 5 years, yeah.
That's good.
I don't know. Well, the reason we've had problems is about getting the right person in the right position. And as the business has evolved, those positions have had to change. And the roles of Patrick's, you know, roles needed to be there when the people weren't, and that was really hard. So that just caused, you know, a lot of chaos around staff. So we're working on that, and, you know, the team is just number one at the moment, really building relationships. I have, we take Sheila, you know, the wingman. She won't come, it's taken her a year to come anywhere near me to just say, hello, would you like a coffee?
I'd make women like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Nicola's pretty scary to work for. Just going back to Michelle's question, this is an interesting position where I ran into a brick wall of, am I genius at the problem that Nicola's now facing? And I realised that I could work with Nicola to help restructure the team and the processes, but do you know what? I wasn't that good at that. And I just had to admit to myself, I'm not genius at this. And instantly I knew who to call, Michelle Hoskin. Because Michelle is genius at it. I sat with her and Nicola. I called Michelle in, made Nicola sit down with Michelle, and said, you've got to talk to Michelle. I sat with her and just listened for a day, and it was magic.
And we didn't stop talking. Yeah,
just absolutely magic. And, you know, Michelle runs the certification for, is it BS?
ISO.
Yeah, 22222, whatever it is, and which is Get Your Business Organised, basically, you have to do that, and she's going to eventually do that to my business as well. I'll have her in there, and she will just restructure me.
What was the eighth strategy? You said
it was 7. Yeah, good question. I think the 8th one was share of wallet, and most of us understand what that is, but I think that's the 8th one. I tell you the one that's really dangerous. Number 7, which is famous personal, famous team. Really dangerous strategy. Why is that dangerous? Because most financial planners, particularly those that are highly qualified, want to play that game. And I hear comments when I interview a lot of financial planners, a lot across every year. And I say, well, what is it your clients love about your business? I'm starting a survey process. And they say, well, they love me. They love me, my empathy. And my ability to get close to them, and it's me, they love me, and my charisma and my fairness and my integrity, you know, integrity are us written across his forehead. Well, that's playing famous personal team, and you're nice people, but you ain't that famous. I mean, you look lovely. There's some high profile individuals here, but not a lot. Give me the name of one person who you would know instantly if I said, well known on TV and radio, financial services, red braces.
Justin.
Yeah. You're nice people, but you're not Justin Urquhart Stewart in terms of profile. So playing the famous person, famous team game when you're not famous is not a clever business strategy. It's a really weak business strategy to build a business on. I'd avoid it like the plague. Sorry.
Time for one last one. There is one last one.
Actually, a comment, and I had to give this to the Indeed Egg a few years back. It's a sign of success of your firm if you're outgrowing your staff. Because many times people can't grow as fast as a fast-growing company. And from working in Silicon Valley, it's very common that you outgrow the entrepreneurs in the business, because the people who work at a small company can't run a 3,000-person company. If you're outgrowing the skill sets of your staff, it may be because they're really good at what they do and they don't want to grow into the other role.
All right, second to last, that was
knowing what you know now, coming back to the staff question, and thinking about the different job functions and roles and so on, two-part question, what would you have taken on somebody first, and would you have taken them on earlier than you did?
Do you know, I look back and I really wish I had somebody speaking that in my ear at the time of the growth. I wasn't close enough to people. When you're in a problem, it's really hard to see it. And, you know, both David and Michelle have been fantastic. What would I have done different? I would have had more of a plan for the growth of the business, understanding the business growth, than I did. I was blind to it. It just shot. Just, you know, it was too successful for I have a business manager.
That would have been the first person you'd have taken on, a business manager.
Yeah. But understanding the skills, what that, see, the skills of what that person needed at ground level was not that tough. But the business outgrew the person in that position, and that caused the big problem.
That's it. Thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for your attention. Thanks to our speakers. I'm sorry. We'll start later next time. And just pop next door, quick something, and then we're out to the Red Lion. Is that right? And there's a room upstairs in the Red Lion where apparently you can buy yourself drink.
Hi, Adam.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good to see you. Well,
I've got it back.
Yes.
How are you doing? All right.
Better.
Excellent. Thank you. I hope you're doing better.
I just a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, bloody hell.
Well, hands for you.
I've got,
you need
I've
it.
Got a snowball.
check my diary. I haven't got this yet.
No, I was going to do my what we said last time.
I'm not allowed to be here.